programming to make better and more nuanced decisions to combat polarisation, intolerance and extremism. That's all according to Kevin Dutton, an expert in persuasion, social influence and the psychopathic personality. He is Australia's first professor for public understanding of psychology at the University of Adelaide, having spent almost 20 years as a research psychologist at the universities of Oxford and Cambridge. Black and White Thinking is published in paperback on Thursday. So, Kevin Dutton, welcome to the programme.
Hi, Hugo. Good afternoon. I think it's afternoon. We've crossed that arbitrary line from morning till afternoon, 12 o'clock, haven't we?
Let's go with afternoon. It's afternoon for me. We've moved from the binary division between morning and afternoon. I would say we are definitely, there is no nuance about it. We are definitely in afternoon.
Yep.
Before we get to how this applies to now, tell us about evolution and binary decision making. Where's it come from? What's going on in our brains and why?
Well, black and white thinking, Hugo, is essential to our survival in the modern day world, because if we weren't able to divide the world up into bite-sized, more manageable pieces, we simply wouldn't be able to make sense of it. So let me give you a couple of examples just to clarify things. We need to have cut-off marks for exam grades, okay? Because if we didn't have cut-off marks for exam grades, we wouldn't have pass or fail and there'd be no point having exams. We need to have cut-off speeds for speed limits, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, even if it does seem a little bit unfair to be done doing 34 in a 30 mile an hour zone. Because again, if we didn't have speed limits, everyone would go as fast as they can, as fast as they wanted, and there'd be no point in having speed limits. So we need lines in order to create sense in the world, but there is a huge tax on drawing lines, which is this: as soon as we draw a line, by its very nature, we create division. And division, depending on what side of it you might happen to fall, can be perceived for either the right reasons or the wrong reasons to be unfair. So we've got a real conundrum on our hands here. On the one hand, we need to draw lines in order to make sense of the world. But on the other hand, lines, as soon as we draw them, by their very nature, create inequity, unfairness, bias, bigotry, prejudice, all those sins of the 21st century endemic to things like cancel culture, othering, and the rest of it.
And presumably the drawing of lines in this way, I mean, this isn't a modern habit. This is something sort of humans have always done.
That's right. I mean, the brains that we have now, basically these binary black and white brains, Hugo, evolved in the world of our ancestors, which was a very different world to the world we live in today. It was a much simpler world. And yet the problem is that we're saddled with these binary black and white brains in order to analyze, to dissect, to negotiate, to navigate the infinitely more complex, the infinitely more nuanced, the infinitely more grayscale nature of reality that surrounds us today. And most of societal problems that we have today results from this innate dichotomy between binary black and white brains that evolved 3.5 to 4 million years ago and this inherent grayscale nature of reality. There was a wonderful quote from that super existential philosopher Noel Gallagher about his brother Liam, the other half of Oasis, of course. He's a man with a fork in a world of soup. and that, Hugo, is pretty much the synopsis of black and white thinking right there in 10 or 11 words, because I happen to think that Liam's not alone. We're all born with forks in a world of soup. And black and white thinking is basically a little nudge that perhaps every so often we should think about trading in those forks for a spoon.
Wonderful. Well, look, I mean, I hope it's not straying from the point too much, so we'll get on to this in just a minute. But why do we have the fork? Why was it advantageous for us to think in this kind of black and white way in simpler times?
Well, over the years, the millions of years of our evolutionary history, Hugo, three major cognitive fault lines appeared in our brains, which govern not just how we process and evaluate information, but also how we go about making decisions. Now, the first of these major binary cognitive fault lines, fight or flight, we share with the rest of the animal kingdom. But us humans have taken it way beyond the level of the purely biological and the purely physical. In other words, the rustle in the bushes, can I eat it or can it eat me, to embrace the realm of the intellectual. So, for example, is this an issue, an argument, or a cause that I can believe in, that I can engage with, that I can fight for? Or alternatively, is it an opinion or point of view that I can quite happily ignore or leave behind, or that doesn't appeal to me? The second major binary cognitive fault line us versus them evolved at a time when our prehistoric ancestors first started cohabiting in small groups and thereby took out pretty much the very first insurance policy against death. So in the world of our primitive ancestors, small groups provided a lot of evolutionary benefits such as safety in numbers, division of labor, etc. And the third binary cognitive fault line, which is basically right versus wrong, the moral dimension, evolved pretty much to keep those small groups together by targeting primarily rampant self-interest and keeping it in check. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Those three binary fault lines, Hugo, still exist in our brains today. So if you are a persuader or an influencer who wants to get your point across, the more you can frame your message so that it aligns with those three major binary cognitive fault lines, the more powerful your message is going to be. And whether you're right or wrong, you're going to get people to sit up and take notice.
So this is basically the framework, the mental framework by which we ought to be understanding a lot of the most divisive issues in our sort of society today, from issues of them and us, leave and remain, issues of identity, all that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, you've actually, you know, put your finger right on it there, leave or remain. I mean, Brexit is probably the most, coherent example of this in recent years. Now, I happen to think that the reason that the Leave campaign won the referendum wasn't because they had superior argumentation. In my opinion, they didn't. But the reason that the Leave campaign won the referendum was because they were better able to frame their messages to align with these three binary, what I call super frames. Great example, we'll just go through them. I mean, let's look at fight versus flight. Okay, so, it's time to stand up to these bonkers Brussels edicts that waft every now and again across the channel in our direction. Us versus them, well, UK, EU. Right versus wrong. Is it right that our futures, our destinies, are placed in the hands of some faceless foreign entity? So you can see how the Leave campaign harnessed their argumentation and aligned it with these three binary super categories, and that's why they won. And of course, you know, we need look no further than Donald Trump in even more recent years to see how he harnessed it. You know, after a while, people realized that Trump wanted to create division. He wanted to mobilize the us-them dimension because he stumbled upon a fundamental truth in politics that sometimes it's best to appeal in a big way to one group than it is to appeal in a small way to a load of groups.
But so just to pin this down, would you say in like both those, you know, sort of big political, divisive binary debates, Trump, well, leave or remain, and Trump or not, Trump or not Trump. Would you say that it's not that one side was doing this and the other side wasn't, it's just that one side was better at it?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think if you can frame your argument so that it appeals to one, two, or all three, if you can frame, you know, your arguments appeals to all three of those binary cognitive superframes, then as I say, whether you're right or wrong, you're going to get people to sit up and take notice. I always remember a few years ago interviewing a rather well-known British QC, who was a prosecuting QC, and he said something I'll never forget, Hugo. He said, information travels around the brain like electricity travels around a circuit. It takes the path of least resistance. So if you're up against me in court, and you can make your message travel around the minds of the jury quicker and simpler and easier than I can, then you're going to win the case. And it basically comes down to that.
But I mean, obviously, there are people who, I mean, on all sides of all these debates who object to what you're saying enormously, because you're basically telling them they're not thinking rationally, right?
Well, over the years, the millions of years of our evolutionary history, our brains have learned to take shortcuts, to use mental rules of thumb to make decisions. And we had to. I think the writer Kurt Vonnegut once pointed out, life happens too quickly for you to ever have to think about it. Now, if we were to use a home improvement analogy here, Hugo, okay, the wiring that our brain has to take these mental shortcuts, to use these cognitive rules of thumb, can be put in by one of two sources, okay? It can be put in either by reputable tradespeople on the basis of reliable information. So, for example, scorpions pack a very dangerous and painful bite. So it would be madness to even think about picking one up. Or this wiring that our brain has to take cognitive shortcuts can be put in by cowboy traders on the basis of unreliable information. So, for example, black people are more violent, black people are less intelligent, black people are more likely to engage in criminal activity, that kind of racist agenda that you get. Now, this isn't to say, Hugo, that this wiring that the brain has to take these mental shortcuts isn't important. It is important, just like electricity in the home. It's essential, in fact. But what I am saying is that if it's put in by cowboy traders, if it's put in on the basis of unreliable information, if it doesn't pass those health and safety standards of critical thinking, of fact-checking, of source-checking, that we need to come up with rational arguments, then it can often be very dangerous and sometimes downright deadly.
So, okay, so what do we do about it? How do we escape this trap? How do we escape basically falling into a tribe and just and agreeing with the tribe rather than remaining as rational beings?
Well, in the book, I write about something called the viewfinder principle. And the viewfinder principle basically refers to our natural ability, most of the time anyway, to gauge the appropriate level of detail in which to process and evaluate information. Okay, so just as cameras have a portrait and a landscape setting in which the viewfinder is set either in or out respectively. So our brains have a cognitive viewfinder, which naturally adjusts to informational context and which also is responsive to the particular demands of any situation that we might happen to find ourselves in. So very quick metaphor for you. Imagine you were standing in an art gallery and you were viewing an impressionist painting. Okay, you might want to stand a little bit further back from the canvas than average in order to make sense of the picture as a whole. However, imagine if you were to stand just a few feet to the side of it in view of a Vermeer painting, for example, you might want to move a little bit closer to that painting to really appreciate Vermeer's finer brush strokes and the pointillist technique of some of his work. So if we look at that in real life, what we need to do is we need to think, okay, what is the appropriate level of detail in which we want to look at situations, okay? So sometimes we need to take a broad brush approach. Sometimes we need to look at it closer in. So if we look at stigmatization and stereotyping is when we look at groups from too far away and we make generalized assumptions about them. So, you know, all alcoholics, all obese people lack willpower. You know, it's something to do with them. That's a classic landscape view of a group. What we need to do, we need to start thinking about these cognitive viewfinders and what's the appropriate setting. And it's not easy. VAR is a great example of that, okay? More kind of flippant example. So in football, we were happy a long time ago with just taking a landscape view and looking at subjective judgments of referees to judge, say, offsides. All of a sudden, we decided that we wanted to be a little bit more black and white about it, and so we got VAR involved. But actually, now these kind of quantum millimeters of offsideness is just a little bit too much for us to handle. And it's now we're in this kind of dilemma between, well, what's the difference between the facts and the truth? So a fact is that, you know, a tomato is a fruit. Truth is you wouldn't put it in a fruit salad. So if you are a quantum millimeter offside, is it really in the spirit of football? So to answer your question in a very long-winded way, we need to start thinking about where our viewfinders are set. And the apertures of which we're looking at various issues in society. That's a start, anyway.
But what's in it for us? I mean, in the if we're like sort of following our evolutionary programming, and if we're, I mean, something like sort of cancel culture. What we're doing is we're being part of a tribe, and we are finding safety in not being confronted with stuff we disagree with, right? So what's in it for us? I mean, it feels morally right to not do that, to try and sort of escape this binary thinking. But how will we in any way benefit from it?
Yeah, I think if we continue down this road, I think, you know, we're going to get a society in which, you know, it's already getting out of hand, in my opinion, with cancel culture and with othering and fake news. I mean, obviously, if we keep going down that road, we're going to get to that. I mean, here's a crazy stat for you, Hugo. At no point in our evolutionary history has what we say or believe, has our identity rather ever been more dependent on what we say or believe, or rather what we are perceived to say or believe. So, you know, you've got hubs, you've got bubbles, you've got internet forums, you've got chat rooms. All these things are very, very visible on social media. And these are pushing our group loyalty buttons all the time. So one thing that we know, which science shows, is that we have an evolutionary drive to form groups, as we talked about earlier. But once we form groups, we've also got an evolutionary drive to favor our own groups over other groups. Okay, so that's why what's happening is with all the kind of proliferation of groups out there on the internet, what happens in a public space when there becomes overcrowding? We start sticking our elbows out, we start kicking out because we want to protect our space. This is also happening in the intellectual and conceptual space. So we need to just kind of pause here and think, okay, well, if that continues, then, you know, just like in a public space, you're going to get total anarchy and you're going to get fights breaking out right, left and center. Society can't function like that. So that's what's in it for us. In order to, you know, be able to continue with a coherent society, we need to kind of moderate how we categorize and rein some of these judgments in.
Sure. So basically, embrace the uncertainty, embrace the grey thinking, try and get out of our tribe. Basically, brilliant. Look, thank you very much indeed. That's Kevin Dutton, Dr. Kevin Dutton, Professor.